This podcast is from Allegro Non Troppo on Joy Melbourne 94.9 radio station, Melbourne, Australia, and is produced for you by Adam, Peter and Robert. Hello and welcome to Allegro Non Troppo, presented by Adam and Peter across Australia on the Community Radio Network from local station 3JOY. It's Joy 94.9, Australia's first gay and lesbian radio station. Gay Scotland is actually located in Melbourne. When we think of new and emerging communities in the Australian context, we think of African and Middle Eastern people relocating their lives here.
There's another wave of immigration taking place that is not really visible, or not readily visible, but is nonetheless very apparent to those in the know. There are a lot of Scottish homosexuals here.
Why? What's going on? With the British cultural revolution towards homosexuals so much ahead of Australia, why are we seeing so many Scots people coming down under?
There's a bit of a problem with homophobic bullying in Scottish schools, but it doesn't seem any worse than anywhere else, so that doesn't seem to be the reason. They might have come to Australia for the weather and beach, but that's not the case in Melbourne, where there's a huge contingent of Scottish expat. Seems like every second person on the gay scene here has a Glaswegian accent.
We'll discover the secret behind this invasion with Hugh and Nicola on Allegro Non Troppo today. There'll be no jokes about haggis, kilts or bagpipes. I promise to Mary, Mother of James. Hello, Hugh.
Hi, how are you?
Hello, Nicola.
Hi, Adam. How are you going?
See, thick Scottish accent straight away. Every time I go out on the scene, I seem to run into all of these people with Scottish accents. Now, what the hell's going on? Why are there so many Scots people coming to Australia?
I don't know why Nicola came. I came for love. That's why I came.
Did you? So you met somebody and you came here to be with them, Hugh?
Yeah, I did, yeah.
An Australian person?
Half Australian, half Scottish.
Okay.
Mother Australian, father Scottish. And he wanted to come back here, so we came back here about 19 years ago.
And Nicola, I know your story, but tell the listener why you came here.
Well, originally I met my now ex-partner in Edinburgh. She was doing, just starting a working holiday visa, in fact. So we were together out there and then for about 2.5 years. I came here on holiday with her, expecting it just to be a working holiday visa myself before going back to Scotland. And she didn't really want to go back at the end of it. Okay. So I went, oh, right, okay, well, there's not many options here. Either we're not together or, well, I go back to Scotland on my own. Otherwise, I stay in Australia and... Well, I decided I actually quite liked it. So,
for a fairly small community and community radio station, Joy 94.9 has got 11 Scots people.
11?
Oh. 11, yep.
There you go.
And so I want to find out why there's so many. Now, let's get the terminology right. People generally say Scottish, but I believe the correct term is Scots. Is that right?
I'd answer to either, but I think Scots is the correct terminology.
I would say Scots, yeah.
Scots, okay. We're going to talk a little bit about Gay Scotland because I've been doing some research over the last few days and I've been completely fascinated with what I've found. Because there's some interesting things about Scotland and particularly about the gay Scots. Because 20 years ago, it would have been one of the worst places in the world for gay people to be. But actually today, it's really, really good. So I want to find out why there's so many Scots people, particularly in Melbourne. The population of Scotland has been around about 5 million for the last 50 years. But guess what? It's declining. The population in Scotland is going down.
Maybe it's the cold weather, do you think?
Or maybe it's all of the gay people there.
Well, yeah, it could be all of us, you know, exiting. I just don't... Look, it's quite liberal attitudes now, but... There's just more fun places to be. That's part of my opinion on it, you know. And as gay people are not quite as tied down, I feel, it's easier to look, you know, further in the horizon and see if there might be somewhere else that would be better for you.
Okay, so the population density of Scotland's not that high. There are 65 people per square kilometre. There's 5 million people living there. 52% are female and 48% were male. So there's more women in Scotland than there are men. The majority of the population are concentrated in the central area around Glasgow in Edinburgh. Mm. The Highlands and Islands have the most area, but the fewest people. The biggest cities in Scotland are Glasgow, with 500,000, Edinburgh, slightly smaller, almost 500,000, Aberdeen, 200,000, Dundee, 150,000, Inverness, 50,000, and Stirling, 86,000. Now, Hugh, you're from Edinburgh.
Yeah, outside Edinburgh. Yeah.
And you're a Glaswegian, aren't you, Nicola?
Yes, I am. Originally from near Glasgow.
Okay, so let me ask you this, between Glasgow and Edinburgh, is it a Sydney-Melbourne thing?
Hell yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. I don't think... Edinburgh's probably not got the same kind of competitive feeling about it. They just kind of...
Which is like Melbourne towards Sydney. Yeah,
yeah, I think Glasgow's got more of a chip on its shoulder. I mean, Edinburgh's the beautiful city that everyone wants to come and visit when they come to Scotland. I think that's fair. It's picturesque. It's got the big fairy tale castle and stuff right in the heart of it.
We have the culture, don't we?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Glasgow's got the sex, drugs and rock and roll.
Exactly. And shopping. Very good shopping. Apparently the best in Europe.
Yes, the same.
I'm interested also... coming from England, where you've only got to walk a short distance to you come across a totally different accent. Is this so in Scotland? I mean, is there a Glaswegian accent? And
you go from village to village and the accent will change.
I mean, there are some people in England who swear that they can tell somebody what street somebody was born in from their accent. That might be an exaggeration.
I don't know if I'd go as far as that. But,
which
you
is
can
different to Australia, isn't it? Because in Australia, pretty well, the accent's much the same wherever you are.
Edinburgh, Glasgow accent's completely different.
Yeah, they are.
It's 1 hour travelling time between the two cities. And
the Glaswegian is so much broader and faster. Yeah. They speak so much faster. Mm. But see, I grew up for part of my life in the north of England, so the Scottish accent, I don't even notice as an accent. I just know everything. And when they speak in a dialect and they, you know, they use some of the Scottish words, they're just sort of like natural to me. I understand them straight away. But it's interesting, my partner, who's Thai, when he's listening to Scottish people, he says to me, are they speaking English? Yes, they are.
But sometimes the Scottish accent can be so broad that anybody south of the border wouldn't have a hope of understanding, and even if they are speaking English. I mean, is this from more sort of isolated areas that you get these really thick, broad accents?
I think it's quite a historical thing. When you consider how little people would have travelled between areas in years and years and years ago, Australia, for example, most people have been able to travel around quite freely in Australia for quite a long time, so it's neither wonder that accent kind of muddies between places. Mm-hmm. But for a long, long time, people would have been growing up in these villages and never even met the people in the village next to them. So it's neither wonder that the accents are sort of, when there is no public transport whatsoever, you know, horse and cart kind of thing.
Well, we're surprised if somebody hasn't been outside of Australia, whereas in some place in England, as well as Scotland, there are people who haven't even stepped out of their own village.
In the Shetland Isles, I lived there for 3.5 years, and you wouldn't understand a single word that they said.
They sound nice, though. They've got kind of sing-songy.
Yeah,
yeah.
But a lot of the people on Shetland have never left the island. So they don't know anything.
So let's have a look at this in a little bit of a cultural context. So why did this Scottish accent... I mean, was there actually a Scottish language that was not English?
Well, there's Gaelic.
The Gaelic, yes.
Yeah, okay.
Which is still spoken in the Western Islands. People speak Gaelic there.
Okay, so that Gaelic then influenced, you think, the English language, so we have the Scottish accent. Because it's not just the accent, it's the perversion of words. Mm. Okay? There's a child is called a bairn.
Yep.
Why?
Well, I don't know. I mean, Scots is a dialect in itself. Mm. I mean, they actually, in high schools in Scotland, you can write your essays in Scots.
When you say Scots, is this in Gaelic or is Scottish English?
Scots is a Scottish English, I suppose. But if you consider Robby Burns, the Baird, you know, from like, oh, not the Baird, that bloody William Shakespeare. God, it's Sunday morning.
That's
me,
yeah.
God. Robby Burns, when you consider his dialect, that's considered true Scots.
And he was the Baird, my dear.
Was he?
Shakespeare was the Bard.
Oh, that's it, the Baird and the Bard, God. but that's one of these things. You can actually, it's considered legitimate when you're writing your essays. If you were to say, I can and things like that, meaning I know.
Yeah.
That would be okay.
I think that's actually fair enough. It preserves a little bit of the cultural aspect. So one of the things that Britain tried to do is they tried to homogenise Scotland, Wales and Northern Ireland and try and make it all the same. But there's been some resistance to that, and I see that Wales and Scotland in particular, and to a degree Northern Ireland, are trying to maintain their cultural independence and idiosyncratic ways a little bit.
Mm. Well, the countries are all completely different. The people, you have different food, you know, different way of living completely. So you couldn't really mix everyone up and have them all doing the same thing, really.
And in Wales, there's a concerted effort to keep the language alive. Mm. Is this so with Gaelic?
I think you'd notice it in the north, maybe, but definitely the Southern Lowlands. I actually don't know, anyone Gaelic, that speaks Gaelic.
I think I knew about two people, and they came from the Western Isles.
And do you know any Gaelic?
I think they start the news with something like "Viscama." I think that's it. It must mean like "this is the news." But it's really funny because Gaelic doesn't invent new words for things that come into the English language
as well.
They
borrow them.
Mm. Yep. So you'll hear the news and it'll be "Labadoodle here," helicopter. And you're like, whoa, internet. There's all these new words that they, you know, they're not going to try and recreate something.
On the subject of language and accent, one of the funniest things I ever heard, this involves you, Hugh, is just disclaim here that both Nicola and Hugh are broadcasters here on Joy 94.9, the gay lesbian radio station. Mm. Hugh's part of a show called Orange Ribbon, and one of your co-presenters, I think, is Malaysian.
Kafam is Chinese-Indian.
Chinese-Indian, okay. Mm. And I heard him trying to put on a Scottish accent. Yeah. He was trying to talk to you in a Scottish accent, and it was the funniest thing I've ever heard.
He actually dropped that on me once. He had a list of all these slang words and said to me, okay, you translate it into English. But he wouldn't let me see it beforehand.
So he was trying to say them.
Yeah, and he was trying to say them, and I had no idea what he was saying. You know, but, it was funny. It was funny. That's a good for me.
I remember when I was in Glasgow, the last time I was in Glasgow, I went to a Vietnamese restaurant, and this little Vietnamese woman came up to me, and she said with the thickest Scottish accent, and it was just so surprising to see it, but never mind. We're talking to Nicola and Hugh here on Allegro Nonchopo about the invasion that's happened in Australia with all of these Scottish people. Before we start looking at actually some of the famous Scottish homosexuals, because there were some absolutely amazing ones, I wanted to just explore a little bit for the erudication of our listener about this Glasgow, Edinburgh, Sydney, Melbourne thing, because it's quite interesting, because you were saying here you a moment ago that Edinburgh is the centre of culture, a bit like Melbourne is, and that Glasgow's the party scene, the sort of flashy tart of Glasgow. Yet, one of the most significant cultural events that happens in Britain is called Glasgow, which goes from this year it's going from the 3rd of September to the 11th of November. And it's this incredible cultural festival, starting with the film festival that's on in Glasgow. Do you know this, Nicola?
Yeah, I've gone to quite a few Glasgow events. It's wonderful. It's almost like a hodgepodge of all the different festivals we have in Melbourne, but it's all gay
all
stuff.
All at once.
Yeah, all at once. And it tends to be gay stuff or themes that would appeal to gay people. And yeah, we used to come across... I actually lived in Edinburgh as well when I was at uni, and we'd hop in the car, a whole bunch of us, and go to see things that were on for Glasgow. We'd see a couple of plays, and I think we saw a film as well. So.
There used to be Pride Scotland, which was a huge organisation, but it folded in 2002 and went bankrupt with a debt of £60,000. And then it started up in 2004, and they ended up with two. They ended up with Pride Scotia, which is in Edinburgh, and Pride Glasgow. Now, Pride Glasgow went ahead in 2008, but now the website has said there's going to be no 2009, but we're having one in 2010. And when I checked all the web links on the Pride Glasgow website, they were all broken. So do you know any idea what happened there?
I'm not too sure. I know that the rotten weather never really helps when you're trying to put on Pride events. It's a little bit... there was one that I was intending and going to, but it was absolutely pouring down outside, and we all just went, nah. Nah. So, I mean, basically, we all went to gay venues because we thought the crowds would go there afterwards, but no one really got
What month
into
was it on?
I think they did it. They try and do it in summertime. I think it was...
what week was it?
Yeah, I think it's normally in about July kind of time, but okay. Yeah, it really is just your luck. And I think when it's... you know, you've got sponsors and things, and they all rely on a big crowd turning out.
Okay.
I can see why it might be financially difficult when you can't really guarantee
that they're going to go. So that's probably what happened. But it's just quite interesting because here we have this idea that Edinburgh is the place where all of the art and culture happens, and Glasgow is where everybody gets down and has a party. But it actually turns out as possibly in the gay community the other way around, because it's the venues in Edinburgh. This sounds like some absolutely superb venues. Hugh, can you fill us in? Have you been to some of the gay venues in Edinburgh?
It's years since I lived in Edinburgh.
They're all probably still the same, Hugh.
Probably. actually, when I lived in Edinburgh, we would jump in the car and go to Glasgow and go to the venues there because they were much, much better.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And anything for a night out or anything, or even the restaurants were better in Glasgow.
Is Sucky Hall Street still as notorious as it used to be?
Sucky Hall Street, they've been trying to do a lot of regeneration. They've now done it. It's actually funny because the area that was doing really well down near City Centre is actually getting a bit shabby. And it's this massive long shopping strip that's all kind of joined up. And when they'll do up one bit of it and the other bit will start falling into disrepair. So it's a never-ending cycle. They're always trying to regenerate one bit of the shopping strip.
Like painting
strip.
The Firth of Forth Bridge, isn't
it? Yeah, exactly.
Actually, a venue in Edinburgh in the 70s, I suppose it was, and it was called a disco, and it was Fire Ireland, and it was in Princess Street in Edinburgh.
Oh, I've been there.
Have you?
Yeah.
You'd walk up these really steep stairs, and it was three floors up. And
it's a cobbled street out the front, isn't it?
No. Oh. No, it's Princess Street.
Which is the main street.
You maybe came in the back door of it.
And the toilets were another flight of stairs up from there. It was like in the attic. And in the winter, there was holes in the roof and the snow used to come through the roof.
So you held off
as much as possible before you went to the toilet.
I'll tell you the reason I remember the disco is because that was when I was in Edinburgh, I bought my first platform shoes.
Oh.
And the front of my shoes were 2 inches and the heels were 4 inches. Right? And I'd got these huge 70s disco platform shoes trying to walk down this bloody cobbled street
You were in Rose Street, I think, which is parallel to Princess Street.
Well, I fell off and I twisted my ankle. So I had the worst night. All I could do there was sit up there, and I ended up actually drinking Guinness all night, of all things.
Oh, well.
Which
Irish
is not,
drinks.
Yeah, but I just loved it.
Yeah, Guinness never really encourages us to dance.
I quite like Guinness, so it's like drinking soup.
I feel like it's drinking lead. You know, you feel so weighed down after it.
It's exactly. too bitter for me.
Pretty heavy stuff.
Since the 1970s, there has been a huge renaissance throughout Britain towards homosexuals, particularly from the middle of the 80s up until now. And Britain was probably one of the places that was quite repressed. I remember doing a big tour around Britain in 1989. I thought I'll go to some gay venues in London. And it was all so secretive and subversive. I went to one gay sauna. They had one gay sauna in London at that time. And everybody was too scared to touch each other because if you were caught doing anything, you were ejected from the premises.
They had people going through and making sure no hanky-panky was going on.
In the sauna?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And do you know there's two saunas in Edinburgh?
Yes.
And there's four, I think, in Glasgow. Now, how have times changed? But the strongest sense of community I got reading through the web, particularly in Glasgow, is there's a really strong lesbian community. Can you tell us a bit about that, Nicola?
Yeah, it's actually funny because it's actually a much more mixed community than in Melbourne in many ways. There's no real venues. I think there's one venue in Edinburgh that's meant for men only. But I think because there's no particular women's venues, there's women's nights occasionally. There is a really strong sense of connectedness. It can be a nightmare, though, because everyone knows everyone. It's like 7 degrees of separation, and it can cause some real issues. I've never seen gay guys fighting in venues. I've seen it in some of the venues in Scotland with the lesbians, just because it's also, it's very close-knit. You do tend to know most people.
My time I spent in Glasgow, that was, I didn't want to bring it up, but that was one of the things that I noticed. I don't want this to sound like an insult, but I've never seen so many lesbian fights in my life.
Oh, it's nuts.
I saw one girl come out. She'd obviously had a bad night. She came out of the pub and she kicked the door in the first car, and then she moved and kicked the door, set the alarm off, and she kicked about four car doors in on the way through. Oh, goodness. Now, this points to a particular social indication that may be particularly noticeable in Scotland, because some of the things that are really famous in Scotland, the number one thing for me is the whiskey.
Yeah, the booze.
Okay, now, is this endemic in Scottish culture? Is there a large culture or a large binge drinking thing happening here?
I would think so. What you've got to remember is there is only Glasgow and Edinburgh in the central belt. So if anybody wants to go to a gay pub or a club...
They're close.
They've got to go there. If you're in the country, as we call it, you know, 20 minutes from Edinburgh is the country, there's nowhere for people to go. So all they do is drink.
Right.
And then they go to Edinburgh and they just carry on the same culture and they go and get drunk. And you see all the pubs and people are literally falling out the door drunk. You know?
Nicola, what's it like in Glasgow?
Well, I'd say that it's quite unusual because the houses aren't anywhere near as big, I've experienced, as they are in Australia. You don't have the same back garden and you don't certainly have the same people having you over and entertaining the same way that you do in Australia. But what I've found is that the pub becomes like the living room, because like when we were students, we didn't have a living room in our flat. You had someone staying in every room.
Okay.
So the pub is your living room. You meet in there and then you drink.
That's a very interesting statement, and I can see how that would happen. So the social sense, when you want to spend time having chatting with your friends, you can't have them in your house. So everybody ends up down the pub. And what do down the pub? You drink beer.
The other thing is, though, it's very expensive in Scotland, so you don't eat out as much.
No.
So you wouldn't actually say to someone, let's go and have a meal. To go out for a meal is a special occasion. So you say, let's go to the pub. So, and that's just a culture now.
I remember years ago in my youth, which is a long time ago.
Very long
time. Going up with a group of friends to Scotland, to Mallaig, a beautiful little fishing village there. And we stayed at this boarding house. And the beautiful lady there. And we said, is there any particular time we have to be back at night? And she says, no, any time you like, lads, any time you like. Excuse my Scottish accent. Anyway, we pressed her a little further and she says, oh, any time. I'm sure you'll be back by 9:30. And we thought, oh, what rubbish. And we didn't realise until we went to the pub. It closed at 9 o'clock and there was absolutely nothing else to do.
There's actually towns in the north where during the winter they close down. And the pub stays open, but that's it. Everything else closes.
This is fascinating. We're going to do something a little bit more intellectual soon. You're listening to Allegro Non Troppo with Adam and Peter across Australia on the Community Radio Network. Today we're talking about the fact that Gay Scotland actually seems to have relocated to Australia. We've discovered that there's a huge colony of Scottish homosexuals living in Australia, particularly here in Melbourne. And we've been talking to Hugh and Nicola about this today. We're going to actually talk a little bit more about some of the Scottish issues as we've done in the first half of the show today. I'm going to talk about some famous Scottish homosexuals. Now, I've got a bit of a list here, but I just wondered perhaps if either of you, can you think of any people, famous Scottish homosexuals?
There's so many, aren't there?
Well, is there?
I'd be tempted. I'm not sure who I'd be outing if you did. you got to think about who's actually out the closet.
Are there any famous personalities, Scottish personalities?
I don't really. Well, there is a few, but I don't know anything about them. But I mean, off air, I was telling you when I was 11, and you, I suppose now you'd call it a drag queen. But there was a guy who used to go around the little villages round about where I lived and impersonated Shirley Bassey. And I remember seeing him once and he was all dressed up and he had the wig and everything on and the dark makeups because she's dark-skinned. And then it was called a female impersonator.
Yep, like Danny LaRue.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. It's quite interesting. The community here in Melbourne seems to have quite a lot of well-known personalities in it.
Mm.
There's actually not as much drag at all in Scotland. That's one thing I found. There's not that many shows. Mm. There's a few people that you'll see around the place and will chat to, but it's not. Some of the DJs are quite well-known. That's one thing that I've found. But
okay. What I did to research this show, one of the things I did is I downloaded looked on the internet, several editions of Scots Gay, which is the Scottish gay magazine. And there was, I think, half a page of sort of semi journalistic news items that looked as though they'd come from something else. And the rest of it was all of these shows and theatre events and stuff that was on. There wasn't really terribly much happening. Mm. But it was just like opening the gay press here. I mean, the gay press that we have in Melbourne, particularly, and Sydney, Adelaide and Brisbane, is really good. But it's page after page of naked bodies and sex on premises venues. And the thing that you were telling me, Hugh, which is so Scottish, the number of times you see that they just want a quick shag.
That's right. Yeah, I saw this. It's called the Meat Market. And it says, if you're looking for love, or in brackets, or a quick shag, check out the box ads. And I thought that was funny, actually, and it was very Scottish, very, very Scottish.
Yep, tell it like it is. None of this namby-pamby kind of...
Get to the point.
One of the great people in Scottish people who did a lot and set up a group called the Scottish Homosexual Rights Group, and which became Outright in Scotland, was Ian Dunn. In January 1969, he organised the first meeting which led to the foundation of the Scottish Minorities Group. In January 1971, he set up SMG News, which was later called Gay Scotland, and he was the editor for many years. In 1974, he set up what later became the International Gay and Lesbian Association, which is still around today, the ILGA. And he also established the Edinburgh Gay and Lesbian Community Centre, which was the first centre of its type in Britain. Ian Dunn was an active humanist minister and celebrated ceremonies of affirmation for lesbian and gay couples. His partner for several years was Ross Watt. Ian Dunn died 54 from a heart attack. But probably one of the most famous homosexuals, and this is a web of intrigue, it's most interesting, was King James VI, okay, who that later became James I when he ascended to the English throne. His mother was Mary, Queen of Scots, who many believed conspired or covered up the murder of her first husband so she could marry the man who killed him. This made her very unpopular and she was forced to abdicate. She and her new husband were also Catholics in Scotland that was turning rapidly Protestant. So her son James VI of Scotland, became king when he was 13 months old. When his aunt died, Elizabeth I, James ascended to the British throne and became James I. It was well known and documented that he preferred the company of men, and although he was married to Anne of Denmark, they had three children that survived. Although there's a lot of speculation, it's generally well known he was homosexual. One of his long-time lovers was the Duke of Buckingham, George Villiers. There were some horrible conspiracies against James I, including Guy Fawkes, but he ushered in a strictly controlled government in England, and the country blossomed in culture and learning. James' oldest son was Charles I, who they tried to marry off to the Spanish Infanta. There was a scandal and corruption towards the end of his life, but the people of England were very, very fond of James I. He did not endure the papists, though, as he was forced to repress them. He had to negotiate with the Spanish, who were staunch Catholics, to bring about the end of the Anglo-Spanish War. James' educated and artistic nature had a great long-term influence on British culture, fostering the likes of William Shakespeare, and he was probably the best thing Scotland could have ever contributed historically to British cultural identity. He died of natural causes in 1625 after a reign of peace and stability. James I was actually a really incredible monarch. The people loved him, but he was the first Scotsman to ascend to the British throne. Did you know any of that, anybody?
Well, a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I knew that he was the son of Mary, Queen of Scots. We always did Mary, Queen of Scots at school. Mm. I don't know about you, Hugh, but it always seems to be a big part of the curriculum.
Probably in your learnings at school, they probably missed out the bit about him being gay.
Absolutely, actually, yes.
Yeah, I don't remember that coming up.
No,
he had several lovers, but the longest-term one was the Duke of Buckingham, George Villiers, but he had others. But the interesting thing was, Anne of Denmark, who he was to marry, was on her way to Scotland, and there was really bad weather, and a ship was forced to ground in Norway. So James organised 300 ships, and they all sailed over to Norway to bring her to Scotland. And he did indeed love her, and he was with her sort of like as husband for a few years, but apparently that soon waned off, and he went back off. And he did have another heterosexual affair with another woman, but he was basically gay most of his life. It was a really interesting read, and James the First, when James the Sixth, who became James the First, was probably responsible for the start of the cultural renaissance that happened in England at that time. The other thing to look at that's interesting in Scotland is the change in the social climate. As we said, during the 1970s, it seemed to be particularly homophobic because there's this real macho thing about Scottish culture. Is that right?
Oh, absolutely. It's been said before that the only acceptable time for a guy to cry is when he's watching the football. You know, so you know, when it's soccer, it's okay to cry, but anything else would be kind of quite unacceptable in Scottish culture. I don't know why it is. Maybe because it's always been such a working class society, and yeah, there was a lot of coal mines in Scotland. There's a lot of farming. There's a lot of kind of heavy industry as well.
Okay.
So I do wonder if it's kind of the macho side of it comes from such a labour intensive.
What about the general feelings of the sort of macho guys in Scotland? Are they particularly sympathetic towards gays, or is there this anti-gay thing?
I think in recent years people have come to care less and less. I honestly do. I think at school I did see a bit of... There was a guy at school who everyone thought was gay. He was just a really quite effeminate guy. He's now married with kids, but I witnessed him being put headfirst in a wheelie bin and also thrown over a hedge. The poor guy was tormented every day of his life.
Mm. I did read, as it was, I was researching for today's show, that there is a degree of fairly serious bullying still going on in Scottish schools. But look, I think that's the same everywhere else.
I think so, yeah. But in Scotland, you've got to remember it's very small communities, very small. And a lot of guys that I know who I always suspected were gay actually got married and had children.
Okay.
Because it's the thing that you do. And if you're living in a small village, everybody knows everybody. So the last thing you're going to do is come out as gay.
It would take a lot of courage to do that in those communities. I'm sure.
And the population of Scotland is 5 million, and Edinburgh and Glasgow fairly close, like 500,000 people each. Now, that's not a lot, but I suppose the fact that they're close together, so that's like the population of, say, if you put them together, say, Glasgow and Edinburgh, it's like the population of Brisbane, Adelaide.
Yeah, it's kind of it's the way it works, I think, is most people tend to move from their villages or towns into those main cities, then come out before they go home, if you know what I mean. And whether or not they come out in their hometown is a bit, yeah.
But even in the city, if you live in Edinburgh long enough, you get to know everyone. And you go to the pub and it's the same faces that you see all the time, and slowly, you know... I know in Edinburgh, if you didn't want people to know you were gay, you stayed away from anywhere that was
Greenside Place.
Gay. Yeah.
Do you find many of the people, would you expect many of the people in the young Scots when they sort of start to get out and a little bit more mobile, they move down to England?
I think there is quite a, not just England, I think there's quite a trend for people to look wider than their horizons.
Yeah. Is this particularly noticeable in Scotland, or do you think this is just general?
Well, they talk about a particular brain drain in Scotland.
Yeah.
There's a problem where a lot of the young people who have been educated and are academically and professionally strong go on to greener pastures in other countries. So they've got a real problem actually keeping that, I suppose, level of intellect in their own country.
And yeah, as we're saying, the Scottish population is declining, and we've noticed here in Melbourne there seems to be a lot of gay Scots. I still can't understand. I mean, I know why you two are here, but why are there so many gay Scots in Melbourne? They can't be here for the weather or the beach. I could understand if they were in Queensland or somewhere else, but they just seem to come to Melbourne.
I think the one thing I find when I go across there is it's so expensive to live there.
Is it?
People come in here saying, oh, why is it so cheap here to live?
So do they generally have a better standard of living? Do you have a better standard of living, both of you, since you've been living in Australia?
It's better, and I would say it's more freer. You do things here that you would never do in Scotland.
I've been very lucky. I think I've had opportunities in my career here that I just wouldn't have had the same way at home. I think that Australia has got some fantastic opportunity. I mean, I can't remember. I started in Edinburgh. I was doing a good office job, earning £5 an hour.
Okay.
You know, that was considered a great job. All my friends were really jealous of the great job that I had.
£5 an hour, that's an out, isn't it?
Yeah, it wasn't much above minimum wage. It was probably about 30 pence above minimum wage. But everyone's like, ooh, 30 pence above minimum wage. Nice, good job. Yeah, it's kind of worrying. I mean, as a young person.
I've known you for quite a few years, and I knew you when you first came to Australia. I have to say, you look perfectly happy and content here.
I am. Melbourne's actually such an easy city to feel at home in. I think, actually, seasonality. You said before that the Scots don't come for the sun and the beaches, but I don't think I could cope with it being really hot and really sunny all year round. This is perfect for me. You get colder weather, you know. It kind of reminds me of home, where there's distinct seasons.
That's probably part of it, I think.
Yeah, it's actually quite depressing when you go to Scotland after living here for so long. The last time I went, it snowed or rained every single day for a month that I was there. So for 1 month, before you went out, you knew you had to get wrapped up in 4 layers of clothes or whatever. And otherwise, you were going to be soaking wet or freezing cold.
Tell you what, though, because it rains so much, I enjoy the longest shower you've ever, ever experienced whenever I go home.
One of the things that struck me was when I first came to Australia, I went to stay with some people from Central Europe, which was a communist country at the time. And it's interesting how you, when you come from those kinds of places, how you perceive Melbourne, for instance, in a different way than somebody who's come from Scotland, maybe. But they were just fascinated by the fact that they could live their lives without anybody interfering with them. They could do what they wanted. Nobody bothered them. Whereas in a communist country, they were hounded to join these groups and suppressed. And
oh,
all
God, I had experience of that when I was in East Germany. A number of times I was frog marched by Stasi, and when I produced my British passport, I had a British and Australian passport, a different kettle of fish, because I looked like one of the locals, I assumed I was. There was a couple of times I had butts of rifles pushed me off a train. We're talking to Hugh and Nicola about Gay Scotland. Now, there's a couple of other things that I just wanted to talk about, because we're talking about people leaving Scotland and leaving Britain. There's been this sinister development, and I'm not sure whether it's sinister or whether it's me just being paranoid here. But in 1998, we had this thing that was passed in England called the Antisocial Behaviour Bill. And it actually became law in 2003. And in 2004, the Scottish Parliament also passed the Antisocial Behaviour Bill, but they followed it up with CCTV. Now, London is supposed to be like, they've got these CCTVs everywhere, but the same thing's happening now in Glasgow and Edinburgh. They're putting CCTV everywhere. Can you tell us a bit about this?
Yeah, I think it's interesting. They say that you, in London, you can walk from one part of the city right the way across the city, and you will just move between different networks of CCTV cameras. I find it a bit unusual that it's going to happen in Scotland. I think because, as Hugh said, it's actually quite a small place and lots of people know each other. It's not that hard to find out who's responsible for something.
Yeah.
I don't know whether I'm going to find, when I go, I'll go home at Christmas time. I don't know whether it'll be more, it'll seem like Big Brother state, or whether it'll be kind of a reassuring thing when you're out, because there is, as I mentioned, quite a bit of street violence, same as there is in Melbourne at the moment from all events.
In which there are CCTV cameras going up around Melbourne quite a lot.
Hugh, have you had any experience of this?
I haven't, no, because, I mean, I've been away for so long, but when I went back the last twice I went back, I found in Edinburgh there was a lot of beggars, and that's
really
something I never ever saw in Edinburgh. There's a lot of Eastern European people, huge communities of them, and in Edinburgh a lot of the beggars are from Eastern Europe, and in the country where my mother lives, she lives in a village in the country, they've actually got an area of the village and it's all Eastern Europeans. And my sister was telling me there's drugs, there's everything there now.
So this may be one of the reasons why this CCTV thing is happening. But it's happening in Melbourne. Now, I've sort of, first thing that happened to me when I read this, oh, this is terrible, you know, no privacy and anything. And I actually started to think about it. Is it so terrible to have this CCTV? You know, in Melbourne at the moment, in Victoria, the police have just been trialling this new device, this scanning device, which can scan hundreds of number plates in a minute. And inside the police car on the screens, all the information about who owns the car and who's likely to be driving comes up on the screen instantly, and they can just pull over cars that have got unpaid fines and all sorts of things. But now it's going a step further. They're pointing the camera the other way down the street, and they're using face recognition software for cars that are driving fast. It can recognise the faces in the cars. Where's this all going?
I don't know. As a kind of law-abiding citizen and someone who'd be kind of... I don't think I'd be doing anything behaviour-wise that would get me in any trouble. I kind of find things like that almost reassuring sometimes.
Exactly what I was thinking myself, you know.
Yep.
But hang on, you're skating on very thin ice because you're not doing anything that you would consider to be anti-behavioural, okay? So all of us doing that. Now, let's just have a look at how quickly opportunities and political opinions change. You're a lesbian.
Yeah.
That could be an antisocial disorder. And if they saw you on CCTV going into a lesbian venue, if suddenly society or politicians decided that was undesirable, you could be slapped with an ASBO.
Yeah, no, that kind of thing is a terrifying prospect. A little bit. Have you ever seen the film Minority Report?
Yes.
Yeah, that kind of concept, if they can recognise your face, you can't escape once they recognise your face. And if they decide what you're doing is a crime, then... Yeah, there's no.
So this is a matter of limiting what they do with the information, isn't it? As in any other things, like with your personal information regarding bank accounts or whatever, there are limits. There are laws laid down privacy laws laid down. They can't pass on certain information.
How come Scotland is so much more socially progressive than Australia?
Socially progressive.
Is it? It certainly is. Gay people can get married in Scotland.
Yeah,
they can't in Australia. I believe gay people can adopt in Scotland.
Yeah, but
and there was a huge thing, and particularly the small but very vocal Scottish Catholic Church said they were going to close down their adoption agencies if they were forced to allow gay people to adopt.
Yeah, but at the same time, the Church of Scotland, which has the majority in Scotland, actually came out in support.
Did they?
Yeah, they supported gay and lesbian adoption.
Now, see, so... Have we got any churches in, apart from perhaps some of the gay churches, do we have any church in Australia that is coming out to say they would support gay and lesbian adoption? No, we don't. Do we have any choice about wanting to get married in Australia? No, we don't. Okay, so the welfare of gay and lesbian people in Scotland is much more on the agenda than it is in Australia.
I think there's actually quite a lot of gay and lesbian politicians in the British Parliament and yes. I think in Scotland as well. I think it's much more... and, you know, we've got a few people in Parliament now, but in Australia, but I think it's funny, you've almost got to have a close connection to the issue yourself and I think to do something about it for a politician to take that initiative. Also, Scotland's got the excellent advocacy group Stonewall. The whole of the UK has Stonewall.
Okay.
And they work tirelessly to try and keep progressing. I mean, I've done all these postcards to my MPs and had written responses from them in Scotland. Like they did a written response to everyone who submitted to them asking for civil unions.
Really?
Yeah.
That's pretty good, isn't it?
The thing in Scotland as well, the church, whether it be the Church of Scotland or the Catholic Church, are very strong. Very strong. And in the villages, if you're a Catholic and don't go to church, you'll be spoken about, you know. And if you're with the Church of Scotland and you don't go to church, you know, it's frowned upon. And I'm actually surprised that the Church of Scotland has come out with it, whereas the Catholic Church has said no. I can understand the Catholic Church saying no. But
can I ask you a question then? Is there a sense of religious and geographical parochialism? Do you find that one particular village is a Catholic, dominated mainly by Catholics, and the next one's the Scottish Church or the Anglican or Protestant?
I think in my hometown, it's a little bit bigger. It's about 12,000 people. There was a divide. We actually lived right opposite the Catholic chapel, mm-hmm. and in the same street you had a Protestant church, but there was actually five Protestant churches in mm-hmm. our town mm-hmm. and one Catholic. Mm. It's I think in certain parts of Scotland it's almost like a slight geographical areas, like round about Parkhead, which is the Celtic football ground yeah. in Glasgow, is a very, very Catholic area. Mm. And then you'll find round about Ibrox, where Rangers play, is very, very Protestant, mm. which is, you know, they've focused round about the other churches in Scotland, the football teams.
Okay. Well, that's true. I mean, especially in Glasgow. I remember walking through Glasgow, and I have a crucifix, and I remember passing these guys and went, oh, he's, I forget what they call Catholics now.
Fenians.
Fenians, that's it. So it's actually quite dangerous walking around, you know, showing anything like this.
Is this interesting, though, that because it was Henry VI who started this, Henry VIII, rather.
Henry VIII
who started this, and it's still largely unresolved mm. because he recanted the Catholic Church because he wanted to get divorced, and it's created this religious division which has gone through Britain for all of these years. It was horrific in the 1970s in London. Mm.
When I grew up, when I was at primary school, the Church of Scotland, they had the local hall. They owned the local hall, and the scouts used it for their weekly meetings and everything else. And if you were a Catholic, you weren't allowed to join the scouts because the Church of Scotland did not want Catholics. And the priest, the Catholic priest, agreed with them. And said, "Yeah, that's right. I don't want the Scottish children going into the Church of Scotland hall." So, it's bred into you as you grow up in Scotland, and it causes a lot of problems and a lot of trouble. And then you've got the Orange Lodge, who have their marches every year through the town, and all the Catholics disappear and stay inside.
Do you know, out of all of the Brits, this has underscored to me that the Scots and the Irish seem to be the most passionate people. I get the feeling that most English people are sort of middle class mediocrities. The Welsh people don't have the same amount of passion because they don't have anything dividing their country. But Scotland and Ireland, I mean, Scotland, it's not just the Catholic, as you said, it's the football teams as well.
Oh, yeah. Mm.
But Ireland, the division between Catholic and Protestant, I mean, it was a civil war which spilled over into Britain. I was in Britain several times when bombs went off. You know, and it was just the most scary, frightening, awful thing.
In Scotland, you actually find pubs are Catholic and Protestant pubs. Mm. And you, if it's a, like being a Catholic, I remember going into a pub with my parents one time I was across, and my dad looked really uncomfortable because I had picked a pub. And I said, "What's wrong?" And he went, "Well, you know, we're in the wrong pub." And I said, "What do you mean?" He said, "This isn't a Catholic pub, this is a Protestant pub." And we had to leave.
Jesus gracious.
You can normally tell by the football colours, because I think a lot of the pubs that have got an allegiance to a certain religion or a certain faculty of the Christian religion will display the football colours of the team associated with that.
Now, just a quick wind-up. So all of these gay Scots who are living in Australia, are you going to be here forever, Nicola? Is this going to be home for you?
Look, I see for the foreseeable future that there's more opportunities for me. My partner is from Melbourne, and yeah, we own our house.
What about you, Hugh?
Yeah, I've been here almost 19 years, and I can't see me going back to Scotland.
Well, I'd like to say one message to all of the gay Scots in Melbourne and Australia. You're very welcome. It's great to have you here.
Thank you.
Thanks. I thought it was going to be go home.
No, it's great. I've made so many great friends. You're great. This has been Allegro Non Troppo across Australia in the Community Radio Network with Adam and Peter. Next week, we'll be doing our special on mental health. Bye, everyone.
Bye.